in a place called the City of Angels. One of us,
Dr. Weiss,
go.
300,
is about to meet one of them.
Have you ever been seen, Cassiel? Have you ever been seen like you were a man?
Come on, don't do this.
He's going.
He's not going anywhere.
That doctor in the operating room, she looked right at me.
She didn't see you, Seth. She can't see you. No one can see you unless you want them to.
And if I want her to?
What do you want her to?
Hello, Maggie.
How did you know my name?
Are you in despair?
I lost a patient.
It wasn't your fault, Maggie.
Those eyes. The way you looked right down into me.
I can't see you, but I know you're there.
Who are you?
Nathaniel Messenger. Former celestial body, recent addition to the human race. You want proof? You can speak every language. You travel with the speed of thought.
And you're reading my mind right now.
Stop that.
You're doing it.
Here you are again. This is Earl.
He told me.
What else did he tell you?
He worries that you never sleep and he loves to see you smile. Oh.
I wait all day just hoping for one more minute with you and I don't even know you.
What do you want to know?
Are you married?
No.
Are you homeless?
No.
Are you a drummer?
Seth knows no fear, no pain. He hears music in the sunrise, but he'd give it all up. He loves you that much.
What's that taste like?
You don't know what a pear tastes like?
I don't know what a pear tastes like to you.
Welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I think today could either go really one of two ways. Either it'll be really interesting and we destroy this movie, or we don't really have a lot to say and it's kind of boring.
All right. Those are the two avenues this podcast generally goes down. So
correct.
we'll see how it goes from here. But following completion of the We Made It Ma Beige Volvo action movie trilogy,
that's the full title. That's yes. Not a bunch of different names. The whole thing.
You know, we were going back and forth on a bunch of different names. We might as well just combine them all.
Yeah.
So the We Made It Ma Beige Volvo action movie trilogy is finished.
That's right.
Over the course of 96 and 97, those three movies are out. The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off, all done. And now, Nicolas Cage has decided to branch out into a variety of other projects. And entering 1998, we have the romantic fantasy drama City of Angels. Now, this film is about an angel who falls in love with a human, and it was Cage's first attempt at drama since winning the Oscar 3 years beforehand for Leaving Las Vegas. So there's that, at least. That's something. Because
right.
After the Oscar, it was just action movies from there on out.
Yeah, it's a good point. After he gave that acceptance speech about how we need to fund small movies and movies like that are important.
Yep.
He went to make the three most 90s action movies of all time.
Exactly. Now, City of Angels is not to be confused with the sequel to The Crow called The Crow, City of Angels, starring Iggy Pop, which came out 2 years before this.
A very different movie.
Very different movie, yes. Underrated, one might say. And by that, I mean one person might.
Maybe one person.
One person might say that. And it's also not to be confused with the Broadway musical City of Angels, which is a comedy homage to a film noir of the 1940s, which ran from 1989 to 1992. And side note, I kind of wish we were reviewing that. Because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's like a lot of things we love all at once.
This film is actually a very loose remake of the 1987 German film Wings of Desire, which was directed by Wim Wenders, who is a major figure in the new German cinema movement, and who was recently nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Feature for his film Pina in 2011. If you remember Pina, that was the... I never saw Pina, but I remember vividly the image of Pina, because it's like this ballet dancer in like the red cloak. All right, you don't know what I'm talking about. Never
mind. No, it whooshed.
Whoosh. So there was that at least. And City of Angels was directed by Brad Silberling. This was the director's second feature after his hit 1995 film that also deals with an otherworldly spirit who gets too close to a human girl, Casper, the Friendly Ghost.
God damn it. I was like, I got it. Yes. I'm on board.
The director of Casper was the director of this movie. Silberling also directed 2004's A Series of Unfortunate Events, which I really like. And most recently, 2009's Land of the Lost with Will Ferrell, which I like less.
Yeah. Wow.
And he's also an executive producer on the CW's Jane the Virgin as well. And this film was written by Dana Stevens, who would go on to write Sam Raimi's For Love of the Game, which I also really like. That's a very good movie. And more appropriately, a Nicholas Sparks adaptation that also deals with otherworldly spirits helping humans find love. It's 2013's Safe Haven.
I'm sensing a trend.
Yeah, it seems like their work is tailor-made specifically for this subject.
Yeah. I mean, if you do something well, I guess keep doing it.
Yeah.
But the well is the question mark.
That's exactly right. Now, recently, she was also the creator of the TV series Reckless, which aired for one season on CBS in 2014. This film stars Nicolas Cage in the lead role as Seth, the angel who falls in love with a human. One extra tidbit about Cage's performance in this movie, you very rarely see the angels blink throughout the movie. Which I didn't notice. But so Cage actually practiced not blinking.
And is he secretly a method actor and we don't know it?
I feel like every time a movie comes up now, it seems like at this point in his career, like, oh, Cage spent 2 weeks with John Travolta in a cabin or something.
Locked in a cabin somewhere.
Or, you know, he went to Georgia to perfect his accent for Con Air or something. Right. Yeah, this is he actually practiced not blinking for this movie, which is such a small detail. Like, it's something I didn't even notice when watching this movie.
Right, not even a little bit.
But by the end of filming, he could do it for several minutes, not blinking, which is pretty impressive. So that's cool. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's a thing for City of Angels. The human Seth falls in love with is Dr. Maggie Rice, and she's played by Meg Ryan. Andre Brower, who crushes it every week on Brooklyn Nine-Nine these days, plays another angel, Cassiel. And Colm Feary, who plays Jordan Ferris, he was in Face Off, which makes this a Face Off reunion. He plays the doctor in Face Off who has the Face Off technology. He's the guy that does the Face Off. I keep saying
Whole reason the movie happens.
He's the whole reason their faces come off. I feel like I have to keep saying the words Face Off over and over again. And he also plays a doctor in L.A. in this movie. So we can assume that someone is impersonating his dead character using his own Face Off technology.
Linking the City of Angels and Face Off franchises.
Right, the cinematic universe of Face Off and City of Angels. Also, Jordan Ferris, his character's name, takes the last names of both Hal Jordan and Carol Ferris from the Green Lantern comics to create this character's name, which is another interesting tidbit. Dennis Franz from Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue appears here as Nathaniel Messenger, and this was actually his last movie.
Wow.
Yeah, the last one he was ever in. He's still alive. The rest of his career was NYPD Blue up until 2005, and then he's been retired since then. Good for him. But yeah, this is the last movie he ever acted in, which is something that's notable. Joanna Merlin of Law & Order SVU plays his wife, Teresa, and Robin Bartlett from Mad About You plays Anne, and she was also in Moonstruck, so there's a reunion there as well. And I saw this on Twitter. You pointed out that Nick Offerman appears in a small role in this movie.
He has one line, and it's amazing.
Now, I actually didn't realize that was Nick Offerman when I was watching it. But what does he say in the movie?
Nicolas Cage, he gets hurt, and he's like, is this blood? And Nick Offerman just goes, huh, is it red? And that's it.
Yeah, that is something.
Yeah, and I was like, wait a second, hold on.
Rewind, pause.
Yeah.
So Nick Offerman, Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec, appears in a small role as a construction worker. And at one point in this movie, you see a pregnant woman's stomach on screen during the scene where Cage is falling to the sky or whatever.
Yeah.
And that pregnant woman is Elizabeth Shue, which makes this a Leaving Las Vegas reunion as well.
Oh, man.
So there is that. And the IMDb plot synopsis for City of Angels reads, this is actually a really silly plot synopsis. I don't know what is going on here. Inspired by the modern classic Wings of Desire, City involves an angel, Cage, who is spotted by a doctor in an operating room. Franz plays Cage's buddy who somehow knows a lot about angels.
That's the best.
I wish that was at the end of every plot synopsis that we would read.
Yep.
You know, the face-off technology machine works like this. Franz plays Cage's buddy, who somehow knows a lot about the face-off technology.
I mean,
so, Mike, what were your overall thoughts on City of Angels? Like, what did you expect going into this movie, and what did you feel like you got coming out of it?
I think going into it, I expected a little bit along the lines of Moonstruck. I was kind of hoping it would be a silly... I don't know why I thought it would be silly, but...
You were hoping for a comedy, I guess?
Yeah, or at least a less dramatic version of this romance story, I guess.
Okay.
But what I got was a very creepy, weird, and boring movie about Nicolas Cage stalking Meg Ryan until she falls in love with him, and a twist happens, sort of. So that's my top level thoughts on this movie.
Yeah. I gotta say, I thought City of Angels was pretty lousy. It's like a potentially interesting premise. I think, I've never seen Wings of Desire, so I can't speak to how good that movie is. But it's a movie that I've heard of, and it's a movie that I am familiar with, and I can only assume that it's a very good movie.
It's a quote-unquote modern classic.
Yeah, so there you go. This movie, it's a potentially interesting premise that kind of turns into a very treacly Hollywood love story. Yeah. The first hour and a half or so when Cage is an angel is really boring. Like, just really, really boring. And it's also very creepy and very uncomfortable. But the last half hour when he's human is hilarious, I think.
It's super weird. It feels very out of place with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the thing I was expecting, like what the last half hour is.
I feel like tonally it's there is some intentional funniness there as Cage is like getting used to being human, but like
I'm
some of that is pretty funny, but I'm more speaking towards like the sequence of events that happens.
Oh, I see.
Towards the end of the movie. Just made me laugh really hard, and it's unintentional. Like, it's not supposed to make me laugh, but it did. Like, it's so dumb, Mike. It's so dumb.
How dumb is it, Mike?
So dumb. And the thing is, like, the movie occasionally brushes up against interesting ideas, but I feel like it's so incompetently told that it never does anything with them. Also, the title City of Angels, I hate it because. Specifically because it took me a really long time, like probably about halfway through the movie, until I realized that it had a double meaning.
Oh my god. Hashtag analysis, Mike.
You know, I knew going into the movie that it was about angels, so I was like, oh, City of Angels, it's a City of Angels, or whatever. And then halfway through I realized that it was taking place in Los Angeles, and I was like, oh. Los Angeles is the City of Angels.
It all makes sense now, Mike.
You bastards. You maniacs. You blew it up. Damn you all to hell.
That's what happened. Because they're clever, Mike. Underpinnings of deep intellectualism. Was that what we said about Face Off?
That is what we said about Face Off, yeah. I don't think this has the intellectual underpinnings of Face Off.
That was... Nope, not even a little bit.
Now, what did you think of Cage in this movie, Mike? What did you think of Nicolas Cage?
I think he's super creepy, and maybe that's because he doesn't blink. Maybe, like, subconsciously, he didn't notice that.
But... He's like the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Until a couple years ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with that? That's one of the special edition changes that Lucas made to Return of the Jedi. Is that the Ewoks blink now? They didn't before.
Wow.
Sorry to explain the joke to you, but keep going. Keep going. Oh,
okay. I mean, I got the joke, but I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh yeah,
that's amazing. he, I guess, delivers a good performance in that he is supposed to be a non-human person out of his element on Earth, and he portrays that in a believable way. It's just insane. And not, I don't think in the classic way of insane Cage being, you know, the thing we're looking for in a lot of these performances.
Right. Yeah, I would say, like, as an angel, I felt like Cage was oddly kind of dull throughout, like, when he's an angel. Like, he's very much underplaying the role, I think. And to be fair, all of the angels are supposed to be kind of the same in that regard, it seemed like. Like, they all kind of have that same manner. They speak in flat voices. They dress like they're in the Matrix. They hang around on rooftops all day.
Yeah, they don't really emote ever.
Yeah, but Cage also comes off as pretty creepy throughout the movie.
Yeah, I think his character, and like those things could be interesting or cool if it wasn't a romance story. And it like he literally comes off as a character stalking prey a lot of the time, an unblinking, unceasing presence that could follow you anywhere. Which I'm pretty sure is the plot of It Follows.
Yes.
But like here, Meg Ryan's like, oh, swoon. Like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, The City of Angels is one of the most stalkery movies I've ever seen. Yeah, and I've seen It Follows. And, you know, I've seen The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I've seen, you know, I've seen some stalkery movies in my day. And, you know, even before he meets Meg Ryan's character, like, the movie opens with, like, a montage of Cage, like, around the city of Los Angeles. And he just spends his entire days hanging out staring at people and occasionally touching their shoulders.
Right.
And it's
in like
weird.
In a sensual way.
Yeah, it's creepy. but when Cage becomes human in this movie, he does get some more life in him. I think that's a deliberate choice. And I think it does work. You know, suddenly it's like, hey, that's the Nicolas Cage I know. You know?
Right.
My favorite part, actually, of his performance there is when, you know, he's human, he runs to the hospital, and he finds Anne, and Anne tells him that Maggie's at her uncle's place by the lake. And he runs away without getting an address or getting directions.
Yep.
And it's never brought up. He just shows up at the lake house.
Yeah, I thought that, like, there are some really funny things that they hint at when he becomes human, and it's stuff that he doesn't understand. Like, he's like, we have computers, we have technology, and he picks up, like, a computer mouse, like a phone, and, like... And when she says, oh, she's in Lake Tahoe, he just takes off running like he knows where it is.
Yeah.
Which is, like, some of that stuff is almost, like, it's okay. It's interesting. It could have been interesting.
The thing about the Lake Tahoe thing is I don't think the movie realized that Cage wouldn't know where it is. You know?
Well, he runs outside, and then he's trying to hitchhike, I think. And then there's, like, there's a humorous exchange between him and a truck driver. And where he's like, Cage says, I'm going to Tahoe. And the truck driver's like, I'm going to Reno. And then Cage just goes, yeah, I'm going to Tahoe. And they just keep going back and forth like that. Because he doesn't understand what he's saying. But it's a silly, like, aside thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm trying to defend this movie. But, but yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play so far? Like, in the past... several movies. This is our 30th movie that we've talked about for the Complete Works.
Wow. So only a thousand more.
So of the past 29 movies, like, how do you think this fits into what we've seen Cage do before?
It's an interesting return to that kind of Valley Girl era where he was, you know, the romantic lead for a little bit.
Right.
But now he has the stardom of having an Oscar and having the three biggest action movies of the decade. But it feels pretty flat after compared to Valley Girl, that kind.
And he even comes off as pretty flat in Valley Girl too. I think that's what we came away
with.
We've seen Cage do romantic lead a few times, right? Like in Valley Girl, like in Moonstruck, Honeymoon in Vegas, It Could Happen to You. It's been a romantic lead a few times. But speaking of Valley Girl, there is a dialogue exchange in this movie that is almost word for word a dialogue exchange from Valley Girl.
Really?
Which is between Seth and Maggie, where the dialogue is, "Let's go." Where? I don't care. What will we do? Anything. Almost word for word. That's from Valley Girl. So I'm assuming that was a conscious reference.
Maybe, or they're just super generic.
Either one works. So were there any moments or scenes in City of Angels that stood out to you, Mike?
I think it's interesting that when Mr. NYPD Blue tells him that you can decide, you have free will, you can decide to fall to Earth. He literally meant fall, like fall to the ground and you'll become human.
Yes.
Which is super weird. So, that sequence, that montage of him falling sticks out because it feels like it's almost trying to say something. Like some interesting thing almost happens because this weird black and white montage of past events, future events, ? Like we see some weird stuff happen.
Yeah.
And then it just doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. That scene where Cage falls to Earth and becomes human suggests a much better movie, I think. It's like avant-garde almost. It's him like falling in slow motion, intercut with images of Maggie, images of like what I gathered is like life in general. Like, that was kind of the idea behind it. And it's all shown in black and white, like a lot of them, and that's a nod to the original movie, Wings of Desire. And the black and white was actually meant to be because the angels don't see color. But I didn't know that was the case until they mentioned it towards the end. Like, Cage says something along the lines of, like, oh, I can see color now, or something. And it's like, what? Like, that was never made clear at all.
Although it does explain the Nick Offerman line, because he says, well, is it red?
And
then Cage exclaims the word color. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what? That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, it was weird. Like, there's nothing to indicate in the first hour and 20 minutes that Nicolas Cage can't see color. And then suddenly when he's human and he can see color, he's like, hey, I can see color now. And it's like, oh, you couldn't before? It's like the bit from the Simpsons musical version of Planet of the Apes.
Of course it is, Mike.
Where the astronaut goes, can I play the piano anymore? Of course you can. Well, I couldn't before. and he starts playing the piano.
It's just like that.
This is the dramatic version of that line exchange. Subscribe to us on iTunes for more of that hashtag analysis.
Exactly. We're going to rename the podcast hashtag analysis.
But the movie does stumble upon something interesting with Dennis Franz's character in Mr. NYPD Blue, because he's also a fallen angel, right? That's his character.
Yeah.
And I think Dennis Franz is fun in the role, but I also feel like he doesn't do much in the movie. Like, once he's introduced, and it's like, oh, that's cool. He's like a fallen angel also, and he has like an exchange with Cage. They go to a diner, and they have all this like exchanges and stuff. But after his big get naked and swim in the ocean scene, he's pretty much gone. Like, he pretty much disappears. Like, he's there. Like, he's, you know, pops up once in a while, but it doesn't really have much of a bearing on what's going on in the movie.
Yeah, he serves basically to give us the exposition of this is what is possible. I'm going to naked body surf, and then that's kind of it, and he's gone.
Yeah, and after Cage turns human, my note that I wrote down is, wait, how is there 35 minutes left of this? Because it seemed like... Yeah. It seemed like it was reaching its natural endpoint, and then it just kind of kept going.
It did. Yeah, this movie is almost 2 hours, and that's too many hours.
Yeah, it's way too long. But we got to talk about that ending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do.
Because it is hilarious.
We were talking about before how this movie seems to just fall back on tropes and things like that, and this ending definitely falls into like Nicholas Sparks stereotype bullshit.
Yes,
about life and romance and stuff.
Yeah, so it's fitting that screenwriter Dana Stevens ended up writing a Nicholas Sparks movie later on.
Exactly.
But yeah, so after becoming human and finding Maggie at her lake house, how we got there is a mystery. They make love by the fireplace because this is a late 90s romantic drama.
Of course they do.
And then the next day, Maggie goes for a bike ride. And feeling so free, or whatever, she closes her eyes, lifts her arms off the handles. She's riding on a highway over a cliff, no less. And then for some reason, she's shocked when she hits a truck and dies.
Yeah.
She dies. This was colossally, hilariously stupid, in my opinion. It was just like, oh, man. Like, I was watching that. And I could see her, like, closing her eyes, and I was like, what are you doing? And she's, like, lifted, like, taking her hands off the handlebars, like, you're gonna die!
Yeah.
And, like, I was watching it, and I was thinking, like, you know, I'm bored of this movie, like, I hope she dies. Like, I didn't think she would, you know? I didn't think that was gonna happen. And I was like, I hope she dies, this is stupid, what a stupid thing for a person to do. And then she actually does die, and I was like, oh, man, good call, Mike.
good job, me.
But yeah, I mean, what was your reaction watching that scene? Because I was like, I was so flabbergasted that happened.
Yeah, I definitely laughed just because of how the rest of the movie had been going. I don't know what I was expecting or what, but it takes this really dark turn, and I was like, oh my god, it's gonna be about the futility of life and like all this crazy shit, and then it's like, no, just to have one touch of her was worth the lifetime. No, like, come on. It falls back on like that Nicholas Sparks romance novel stuff of like to have lived one, like Nicholas Cage jumps off a building and becomes a human.
Yes.
And then the person he did it for dies. And he's like happy that he got to do it even. What?
Yeah.
Which okay, it's fair. Like, it's sure, why not? It's a movie.
Yeah, I get it. Like, here's the thing. The movie's ultimate message, you know, seemed to me to be about, like, embracing life despite knowing that it comes with pain and loss, and that's something Nicolas Cage has to learn as a character in this movie. That's a powerful message. It's also a message that was recently handled very brilliantly in Arrival, which is the new Denis Villeneuve movie, which came out this last month or so. And weirdly, that movie seems like a better story about faith than the one with literal angels in it, you know?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact line he said. Like, because it's at the final scene, Nicolas Cage is talking with his angel friend who appears to him, and he asks him, why did he do it? You know, referencing God, why did God let this happen? And then he kind of just resigns to the fact, like you said, to accept life even with the pains and everything that it comes with. But it's just a hand. I don't know. It just doesn't come off. He gets one day, like literally one day with the thing he wanted.
Yeah. Less like 12 hours even. Like,
maybe. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, it was,
and it just felt, so, I think it also is the message is hampered by the fact that it all happens in that last half hour. Like,
yes,
it's like a marathon sprint for not marathon. That doesn't make sense. A sprint for him to get to, you know, become human, get to Tahoe, have sex, which is, I guess, his whole life's goal. and then she dies, like, the next scene. Like, they wake up, she cuts up some fruit or whatever, and then dies.
Yeah.
It's like, hilarious.
Like, the way the movie was going, it seemed like, you know, their reunion at the lake house was going to be the end, right? That seemed like where it was going to end. And so I think this, like, death ending might have worked if Cage had turned into a human, like, a half hour into the movie or something along those lines. Like, if it happened much earlier on and the movie had become about Cage adjusting to human life or something.
Yeah, and their relationship as a human relationship.
Yeah, like, that could have been really interesting and it could have been something that might be worth watching.
Right.
And not hilarious. Like, I wouldn't have laughed audibly when Meg Ryan died at this movie, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to mention this movie goes to the sad song montage, Will, quite a bit.
Yes, it does. I wanted to bring up fucking Sarah McLachlan shows up.
Yes.
With her Arms of an Angel song.
That was great. That was really good. My favorite was Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yep. Got that note. I said the Goo Goo Dolls, sweet Jesus.
Yeah. It was pretty, like, that was another thing where I audibly laughed, where I was like, I was right after Cage had gotten mugged, and then it started raining as soon as he got mugged.
Yeah.
And then immediately you hear the acoustic guitar of Goo Goo Dolls going, and I don't want the world to see me.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was truly the late 90s encapsulated in the span of 30 seconds.
Yep. Yeah. It made me wonder if that Sarah McLachlan song was written for this movie.
That's quite possible. I didn't check that out. I did want to mention City of Angels was actually a fairly big hit when it came out.
Somehow I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I didn't see what the budget was, but it made about $200 million, which I can only assume is much more than this movie was budgeted for. Although at this point, who knows? Yeah,
I would love. I hope this movie had like a crazy blockbuster budget.
You know, they had
beepers.
They had to spend hundreds of millions of dollars getting all those overhead shots of LA.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
On the trench coats.
The trench coat budget for this movie was out of control. Yeah, I also was a big fan of this. This was a small nitpick. This is something that is a huge deal, but also I was a big fan of Maggie's dimly lit sensual bubble bath in which she is drinking a classy bottle of Rolling Rock.
Yeah.
The beer that we purchased in college because it was cheap and it came in an 18-pack.
That's right.
You know?
But then let's not forget that we have that close-up of her in the bathtub with her leg out, and she's rubbing rubbing the cold beer against her forehead. Yeah. And we pan back 5 feet to Nicolas Cage staring at her. That was the moment where I was like, this is a stalker. Like, this is the creepiest movie of all time.
This is not okay.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched movies where there are literal stalkers as bad guys, and they're not as stalkery as, as this. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, in conclusion, I prefer the religious overtones of Face Off, I think.
Yeah.
I think that movie has a lot more to say about faith and religion than City of Angels does. Maybe not, but at least some of it takes place in a church.
Just more than this movie.
Yeah. So is there anything else you wanted to say about City of Angels, Mike, before we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think we've said all that we can say. Let's see what someone else has to say.
Yeah, so but both of us agree, City of Angels, no good. Although it does have some fun Cage moments in the last half hour, and the last half hour is hilarious. If you're into laughing at these like really dumb things, so
yeah, I think that it's you know, romance movie drama 90s-ness has not aged well in the you know the world where we can analyze things and be like, no, that's a fucked up relationship.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was like, aw.
Yeah. So let's get into some Netflix reviews. Mike, here's a 3-star review of City of Angels. And that review reads this: to the ones who gave it 1 star, it is called life. Of course, Wings of Desire is a classic. This one was okay. So that's weird. 'Cause that's very antagonistic to those who really dislike the movie. Like, hey, it's called life, guys.
Get over it. But yeah, like, yeah, this movie's not that great.
Like, it's fine. Whatever. Here is a 1-star review of City of Angels. Quite possibly the only romantic film that my wife does not like. Cage plays an angel whose job it is to escort the recently deceased to their next life. He ends up meeting and falling for a doctor he meets there, played by Meg Ryan. Spoiler, Cage eventually determines that he can become human and ends up doing so in order to spend a human life with Ryan, who, of course, promptly dies. It is a rare thing to hear my wife curse, but she came up with some curse word combinations at the end of this film that were quite impressive and descriptive. I can't even bring this film up in conversation as it sets her off. I really respect her for that.
Wow.
Yeah, so that is something.
That's about how I feel, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Here's a 5-star review of City of Angels. Absolutely amazing. Heart-filled, dedicated, captivating, and spiritually compelling, especially for Christians like myself. This wasn't an average film about two people falling in love. It was about love, period. Love is no different between man and woman versus angel and woman.
Yep, that's where that sentence should go.
That is the ultimate message of this movie. If you're a man and a woman, or if you're an angel and a woman, it's okay to love each other. I would be curious to see what this person thinks.
If there's any other combinations that could be added there.
I was curious to see if this person had any thoughts about other combinations. they are curiously not mentioned in this Netflix review. So there's that. And then here's a 1-star review of City of Angels. Maybe since Wings of Desire is such a classic, the story should have never been handed over to a hack director and starring hack actors. The best thing about this film is that you get to see Dennis Franz's bare naked butt.
They're not wrong.
Now, if that's the best thing I can say about this movie, then you know it's bad, bad, bad. So, fair point.
Yeah, good point.
And finally, here's the last one. It's a 1-star review of City of Angels. If you are looking for a movie that will give you a good excuse to cry, this is it. This was the obvious goal of the story, to set you up for a good cry over a ridiculous ending. Too ridiculous to elicit any tears from me. It seemed right out of Monty Python to spend an entire movie working towards a supernatural goal and then crush your dreams like a fly swatter out of heaven.
Oh my god, it's so true, though.
He's right.
That is exactly, yeah.
That is a Monty Python sketch where somebody just closes their eyes in the highway and gets hit by a truck, right? That's got it. I'm sure if I go through Flying Circus, there will be at least one sketch.
That happens at least once.
So yeah, that is City of Angels. Not a good film. Mike, you agree?
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was bad. But that wraps it up for this week. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike's Cree Show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you are emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking Nicolas Cage's role in the 1998 Brian De Palma thriller Snake Eyes. So that'll be interesting. It got pretty mixed reviews when it came out, but it's a Brian De Palma thriller, so it should be at least interesting to watch. And you can join us for a film bookcast next week, where we'll be traveling to a galaxy far, far away as we discuss a little movie called Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Are you excited for this, Mike?
That's not even, that can't even describe the amount of excitement. I can't.
Yeah.
So I guess to answer your question, yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked too. This is going to be a good time, I think. So that's very exciting. We very look forward to reviewing that with you. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage. I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't